Welcome to episode 152.
It's time for the RV Podcast. Traveling North America in an RV. Exploring, camping, boondocking, embracing the RV lifestyle, and sharing tips and where to go and how to keep things running right. Here's award-winning journalist Mike Wendland and his network of RV reporters.
Hi, everybody, and welcome to episode number 152 of the RV Podcast. And it doesn't make a difference what kind of an RV you have, whether it's a motorhome, a towable trailer, a tent. Maybe you're just dreaming about getting an RV someday. No problem, because this show is for you. Here we talk about being out there, enjoying God's amazing creation, meeting interesting people, boondocking, discovering fun places, and using the right gear and technology to enhance our RVing lifestyle. So we welcome you and are honored that you chose to put us in your ears this week. You know, one activity every RVer loves to take part in is hiking. And whether it's, a long day trip or a short hour-long loop or a half-day picnic hike, exploring the wilderness by foot is one of the main joys that many of us report about camping and about our mobile RV lifestyle. But staying safe out there needs to be a top priority on any hike. Just this week, there was a tragic story down by the Grand Canyon about a physician, no less, who died of heat exhaustion on a hike. And in this week's podcast, we are going to learn some very important advice from an expert hiker coming up on our interview of the week in just a little bit, that no matter what kind of hiking you do, you will want to listen to this and maybe even take some notes. And we've got lots of questions from the audience this week. We've got comments. We've got RV news and, of course, lots of RV tips as well, plus a great off-the-beaten-path report from our friends the Burkitts. But first, my lifelong traveling companion and my bride, Jennifer. Hello, dear.
Hello, Michael.
Did you see the long-range weather forecast?
No.
Unseasonably cold August temperatures for the eastern two-thirds of the United States.
That's okay with me.
Temperatures in the 60s during the day, and up to 2 weeks of this were expected. It got really cold last weekend. They set record-breaking lows in Missouri and Kentucky and Tennessee and Indiana. So it got pretty cold. But you like it like this.
I don't mind it cold.
You don't? You like it you like it about 60, 70, and that's what it's going to be. Usually this is a really sweltering time of year.
Yeah. So anyway, we'll save on our AC bills.
Yeah, I guess that's one nice thing. It's also a great time for camping because this is the week that school begins across many parts of the country, down south.
In fact, our two grandsons that are middle school, high school, they start on the 15th.
They did. First football game is Friday night down
there
in Georgia.
Yeah, we'll have to try it. It's kind of nice to go down there and see that first game.
Well, it would be nice.
Except we got a grandbaby coming, too.
We got a grandbaby coming next week up in Michigan. We got a grandson playing football.
Two of them.
Yeah, two of them. I think only one is playing football. The high school one is playing football this Friday. Isn't that amazing that school is starting already?
Oh,
where did the summer go?
That's what we say about all of life these days.
I mean, wow, it just has been so fast. And that means good news, though, for RVers, because that means less crowded campgrounds and an ease in the congestion, particularly in the national parks.
That's right. It's a good time to go enjoy those empty spots.
Yeah, August. We've actually seen frost in August out at Yellowstone, where we're told it is even snowed up at the higher elevations in Yellowstone, and then certainly in Glacier in August. So, but anyway, this cold front is the eastern two-thirds of the U.S. With no real quick end in sight. So,
well, I saw a couple trees the other day that were turning. The colors already, and it's kind of soon for that,
It is very soon. It is very soon.
But I love fall.
Yeah, I do too. It's my favorite time of year. It's a great time of year. Hey, August 21st, of course, right around the corner, and this is the total eclipse of the sun. And next one isn't going to be, I don't think till 2024, so this is the last time a lot of you are going to be able to see it. We talked a lot about that. I'll put a link on the show notes to a previous episode of the podcast. It was episode 132. We talked to the guy who runs the Great American Eclipse website, where you can see all sorts of stuff, where the line of totality will begin. Starts in Oregon, comes down to the South Atlantic coast there, about a 60-mile swath of the country. But even in the northern climes, you'll still see a pretty good hunk of the eclipse. It won't be total. And total is what you want to see, because you'll actually see stars in the middle of the daytime. That's how dark it's going to be for about 2 minutes.
Oh, long drive for a couple minutes for us.
You know, but it's some places out west have declared states of emergency because their population is swelling by 1,000%. I mean, I've seen estimates in some little towns that are expecting 10,000 people.
People just don't realize the impact of so many people settling in on a little place.
Yes, so they declare a state of emergency because it overwhelms all the local services, the police force, the ambulance, the hospital, health care, food, restaurants, sanitation. And this is a big deal, this eclipse. And a lot of people are going to, we'll see some of it. I don't think we're going to go anything special for it. Maybe, you never know. We do have a road trekking gathering that is sold out, and that's sold out fairly quick. That's up in Oregon, right underneath the total eclipse, the totality area. But lots of people will be watching it. It's pretty neat.
Yeah, I wonder if those little towns benefit. Some people buying gas and food and a couple of rooms.
But you wonder about the hassle of all those
people.
Yeah,
I think it's probably not worth the hassle.
Well, anyway, if you have not gotten reservations or made plans and you plan to see the total eclipse, you probably going to have to do some driving to find a place to stay, but should be interesting. Just going to be unimaginable beauty, they say. The moon completely blocks the sun. Daytime becomes this deep twilight, and the sun's corona shimmers in the darkened sky. And again, you'll be able to see stars. So I will put a link on the show notes for this episode to that Great American Eclipse website, and also to the interview we did with the guy who runs that, and he's got everything on that, what you need to see it, how to be safe, all that stuff, where the best viewing places are. So go to the show notes for this episode, which you'll find at roadtrekking.com/152, and then just scroll down into the part that says what Mike and Jennifer are up to, and you can read about that and go to those links. Hey, this part of the podcast brought to you by our friends at Campers Inn, the RVer's trusted resource for over 50 years, and the nation's largest family-operated RV dealership with 16 locations across the country and growing. Campers Inn is just a great place to do business if you're shopping for an RV. They are home of the Integrity Pricing Guarantee, and that is a big deal. And that means that all the quotes that you get for a new RV will include everything. Freight, orientation, detailing, prep. I mean, you will never be surprised by hidden upcharges and fees just before you sign the dotted line. Integrity Pricing is what you get from Campers Inn. They sell motorhomes, they sell travel trailers, and more from the industry's leading manufacturers. You can go to any Campers Inn, you can look around and check every different type of motorhome, every type of trailer. They have Tiffin motorhomes, Grand Design, Coachman, Thor, Forest River. They've got award-winning service, hundreds of RVs at the best prices, and certified, trained service personnel, which is so important. Check it out. Professional staff, years of RV knowledge, Campers Inn. You want to do business with these guys. They can be trusted, and they've got a huge inventory.
Is it a gadget, a recipe, a tip? Whatever she has in store for us, it promises to make the RV lifestyle a little more fun or efficient. Here's Jennifer with her RV tip of the week.
Here's a dilemma every RVer has: what to do with wet towels. One of the nice things about traveling and meeting so many of our listeners on the road is seeing how they solve such everyday problems. So it was with our friend Jeff Curry, who showed us his creative solution.
A problem that we all share in a small space is, what do we do with that wet towel? Well, Jeff Curry has an interesting answer.
We took some bungee cords, two S-hooks from the out of a package from Home Depot, and a piece of PVC. We strung the bungee cord through the PVC and then put the hooks over the top of the bathroom door. and it makes a nice portable towel rack and can be stored actually hanging on the lower hooks or hanging in any number of places throughout the vehicle.
Thanks, Jeff. That was a great tip on how to take care of a wet towel, and we'll put a picture up on the show notes.
And be sure to send me your tips and suggestions for the RV lifestyle. You can use the leave voicemail link at roadtrekking.com. Just click it and then use the built-in microphone on your computer or mobile device to record a message to me. You can do it over as many times as you want until you're satisfied. And then you just click a button and it comes right to my email inbox. I love hearing from you.
Jennifer's Tip of the Week brought to you by our friends at Rad Power Bikes, an electric bike manufacturer offering direct-to-consumer pricing on powerful premium electric bikes. And now with free shipping and a special discount for those who mention Road Trekking. Now you are probably familiar now with e-bikes and particularly Rad Power Bikes because you're seeing them all across the country in campgrounds. RVers are adapting these things like crazy because they're so easy to bring. You can put them in a regular bike rack on the back of your RV. They have different e-bike models that fit a wide variety of rider wants and needs. And all of the Rad Power Bikes can reach 20 miles per hour with zero pedaling. All the models give you the choice to ride pedal-free. In other words, you can just ride with no pedaling at all. Just kind of keep your feet out of the way and use the throttle. Or you can utilize five different levels of pedal assist. You can pedal all by yourself if you want. You can combine them. The pedal assist gives you this little extra boost. It's perfect for people who want to get back into riding. Maybe you're recovering from surgery or an illness of some sort, or you're just looking for that extra boost to keep up with friends or family. Every Rad Power Bike will go between 20 and 40 miles on a single charge. It depends on how much of that power assist you use, whether you use a whole lot or just a little. The beauty of Rad Power Bikes is they're priced at often less than half that of comparable bikes on the market because that dealer retail markup chain there is cut off. You're dealing directly with Rad Power Bikes. You get free shipping on all of their bike models. That is a great deal. And here's the special. If you mention Road Trekking at checkout, you will get an additional $75 off. Mention Road Trekking as the coupon code, an additional $75 off and free shipping on top of that. RadPowerBikes.com.
Questions? You've got them. Mike and his network of RV reporters have the answers. Here's one of our questions of the week.
Hey, Mike and Jennifer. My name is Josh, and I'm getting ready to go full-time myself. As such, I've been listening to your podcast for the last couple of weeks, and I really value all of your inputs and insights into the RV lifestyle. But what I just ran across was episode 139, where Mike was having some issues with kayak storage. And what I wanted to recommend, although I haven't actually gotten to try them yet, they're a bit pricey, but there is a site out there called Oru Kayak. That's O-R-U-K-A-Y-A-K.com. These are foldable kayaks, as the name would imply, and they fold down to the size of a large suitcase, which would be much more easily stored in a small Class B like you have. So let me know what you think, and I'll see you out there on the road.
I'm looking at the Oru Kayak site, and they're pretty cool. You're not the first one to have actually mentioned that to us, and I think we used to kind of laugh at it. Jennifer and I did. You didn't like the idea of a thing that kind of folded together, did you?
Or one that blew up.
Or an inflatable one,
right.
Either. You're absolutely right, Josh. I had a great kayak. I mean, a great kayak. The problem with it was it was 10 feet long. It was a fishing kayak. And I had no real way to carry it in our Class B RV, our Road Trek CS Adventurous XL. I could stick it on the inside. And I did that a couple times, and it kind of made a mess.
Yeah, it wasn't a really good idea.
I mean, it fit in there. I could shut the doors, and it would come, you know, the bow would be up almost into the galley area, and it would kind of rest on the headboard over the sofa.
But it was not a, after you've been out on the, in salt water and in water, it's just not a good idea. So I ended up, I used it for a couple months. I had trouble, we kept it down in Florida at our place down there, and I had trouble storing it because we have a condo down there, and I just, there was just no place to store it. And I didn't want to rent space for it. I wanted a kayak that I could use. So reluctantly, I sold it and have missed it ever since. I've toyed around with the idea of inflatables. We didn't like that idea because I do a lot of fishing, but I'm now told those inflatables are pretty reliable. They're not going to get punctured by a fishing hook. But several people have mentioned these Oru kayaks. They're expensive. I will say that. They make three different models, and they fold up in kind of a suitcase. They start at about $1,300, and they go up to $2,500. The one I liked is this $2,500. So their Coast XT. It's a pretty serious kayak. It's good for overnight touring or for long distance. There's a middle one called the Bay Street, which is Bay ST, which is more for casual. And then they have an LT, like a light version, which is just for picnics and casual fun. So I'm toying around with it. I'm looking at them and thinking about it. They still, you know, it's a pretty good sized suitcase, but you could check it on an airplane if that's the way you were traveling. And you could certainly find room for it in the back of an RV. So thank you, Josh, for passing that along. I have not paddled one of them. I looked at at how to assemble them, and there's quite an act. That Oru, you know, as you would expect, you got to fold it in a certain way and unfold it in a certain way, and it's a bit of an involved.
Good for
process.
The engineers, huh?
Oh, the engineers would love it. Guys like me, not so much, you know. But it's very lightweight, and it actually looks pretty sturdy on the water. So I would like to try one before I invested that kind of money in it. So I'm waiting. I'm sure we're going to run into somebody who has one someplace, and I will be able to actually give it a try. Even if there was one local, I would probably take it out on a little lake. But it's pretty small, but it's pretty lightweight, and it would be very easy to carry. So, hey, thanks for saying that. And Josh, you're going to be full time pretty soon. Why don't you go get one and try it, and we'll meet you out there someplace. I think that's a good way to do it. All right, we had two episodes back, on episode 150. I think that was the episode we had on snakes and the poisonous snakes that you got to watch out for across the country. Well, a listener named Chris heard that episode. He wants to point out something about snakes in his state. And then he had some comments, too, about travel. So let's listen to Chris.
Hi, Mike and Jennifer. This is Chris Decker, and I am subscribed to your newsletter, and I enjoy it very much. I'm a new subscriber. Two comments. Found it with interesting that your snake review. I do want to emphasize there is one state in the 48 continental states that does not have poison snakes, and that's my home state of Maine, which is a nice place to be, but certainly traveling in the other states, it's a good precaution to have. My other comment is your travel to and from Canada. Again, we're a border state, and I have traveled to and from Canada numerous times. And traveling, the only time I've ever really been searched was when I went into Canada, actually from your home state. We were going from Sault Ste. Marie, Michigan, into Sault Ste. Marie, Canada, and they pulled us over, and they went to our whole camper, and we spent a half hour there having a good time talking with some of the other Border Patrol people and with the company that was with me. But it's interesting that we've never been really searched coming into the United States, at least not yet. But we continued to travel, and we are actually headed to New Brunswick and Nova Scotia, and that will be interesting to see what happens when we cross the border in Calais. Thank you very much for what you do, and I really enjoy your podcast and newsletters.
Well, thank you, Chris, and we appreciate it. Well, thanks for the tip on snakes. I know now Jennifer wants to go back to Maine. She does not like snakes.
You could take me to Hawaii, too.
Hawaii doesn't have them. They were looking, weren't they looking for the brown snake there? They were all worried about some snake coming across last time we were in Hawaii.
Mm-hmm.
The only time we were in Hawaii.
Yeah, very long time ago.
Yeah, but no snakes there either, I don't think. And I don't know. And that's not continental U.S.
Nope, it's not continental.
I don't think Alaska has any poisonous snakes. Maybe. I don't think so. So I still hold up. I want to go to Alaska. Anyway, Chris, thanks. As far as traveling to and from Canada, I'm a pretty frequent traveler. I would say I visit Canada a dozen times a year at least. I live about 200 miles from the Road Trek factory. And of course, Road Trek is the name of the RV we have. And I go there to cover stories and to see some of the new technology. I'm supposed to be there in a couple of weeks. We're going to install some really cool new top secret. Can't talk about it. Zip. Mum's the word. Twist my arm. Twist my arm. Communications equipment we're going to test out. And that's coming up. But anyway, so I go over there quite a bit. And I have never had a bad experience coming or going. I have never been detained at the border going in. I have found their border folks there to be so polite, so professional. I wrote a story. It's on the Road Trekking blog about, and I was just posted a week or two ago. You can find it. Just search for Canada on the roadtrekking.com blog. And they'll ask you where you're going, how long you're going to stay, why you're going. And that's about it. Now, if they, you know, if you're kind of a jerk, they may suspect something and do some more searching. Every border patrol has this certain formula, this little secret formula that every so many vehicles they do a longer search and every so many vehicles they do a really detailed search. We've just not had that happen going into Canada. However, it's happened to me a number of times coming back into the U.S. I normally cross the Blue Water Bridge, beautiful crossing, Port Huron, Michigan, Sarnia, Ontario. And I will get stopped fairly regularly by U.S. Border Patrol. Now, again, it's nothing personal. It's a certain algorithm that they have. The Border Patrol agents often, several of them know me by face and name because of I'm on TV a lot, you know, and they recognize me. So it's not personal, I don't think. And they're very professional, but they will go through the vehicle. They'll look it over. They have a big magnetron vehicle that'll go around. And I don't know, I don't purport to know what that thing measures, but they'll do that. That's happened to us crossing into New York from Canada, crossing into Port Huron, Michigan from Canada. So we've had a couple of times we've gotten stopped, but again, no one is nasty. They're very professional. Sometimes they're a little curt if there's a big lineup, and you can see why. They expect you to follow the sign that says stay back until you're motioned forward or the other car leaves. They expect you to be in the right lane. There's always a lane for RVs and cars. There's a lane for Nexus card holders, which are those guys with the special thing that goes through. So just follow the signs. Do not wear sunglasses when you walk up to either side of the Border Patrol in either Canada or the U.S. They will ask you to remove the sunglasses, and that is because they want to look in your eyes. These guys have all been trained for what are called microtells, and that is a little movement, an involuntary movement of your eye when you're being less than truthful. And you know, nothing's foolproof, but they're pretty good at it. So wear your sunglasses, look them in the eye, answer their questions. Don't be a smart aleck, and you won't have any problems at all. We going into Canada, the last time we went in together was up in Waterton, Montana, or Waterton on Waterton, Alberta, crossing from Montana. And that guy was great. He was like a tour guide telling us what to see and where to go once we crossed in.
Mm-hmm.
And then we came back through a little crossing in, I think, Wyoming or, no, where was it?
North Dakota.
And they were really helpful there, too. So we have found, you know, these guys have a tough job protecting our borders, and you will not have a problem. If you're thinking about visiting Canada, go for it. This is the time to go. Everything's free. All their national park admission is free to everybody because it's Canada's 150th anniversary or birthday. And we invite you to go see them. It's pretty good, right?
It was easy.
Easy. So don't sweat it. All right. We have one email question that came in. I want to go. A reader named Virgil from the blog sent us an email, and he wanted to know, have us talk about how we select a route for our RV trips. Well, I think we should do a video on that, and we will try and do one for our YouTube channel. By the way, please go visit our YouTube channel. Just look, it's Mike and Jennifer's RV Lifestyle channel on YouTube. Mike and Jennifer's RV Lifestyle channel, YouTube. Please subscribe. That helps us get those videos out there. But anyway, we will do a whole video on it. But in essence, we don't do a lot of planning. I tend to use the GPS first to give us an overall, what's the fastest way there? Because I want to know that. And usually that's along the interstates. But then we will often pick up a book. We've just got a new road atlas, a paper road atlas. We got it at the Family Motor Coach Association gathering in Indianapolis a couple weeks ago. And that's really nice. Each state has its own page. And so we'll look at the GPS suggested route, and then we will try and find blue highways that parallel that route or that are going in the same general direction so that we can, if we have the time to spare, that we can take those less traveled routes and see more of the country. That's kind of how we plan it. We have a general goal of, what's our general goal?
Stop at 330 or 330 miles a day.
That's our general goal. And everybody calls me on that because we seldom keep it because usually we have to be someplace and we have to hurry quick. But when we're planning and we try and build in time so we can get someplace and stop by 3:30 and explore, or don't drive any more than 330 miles so that you can enjoy it. So we'll do a video that kind of shows how we do that. But Virgil, I hope that answers your question. Just talking about it makes me ready to hit the road.
I am ready to go.
I am too. We are always ready to go, though, aren't we?
Mm-hmm.
Hey, are you in the market for a Class B? Listen up, because sponsoring this part of the podcast are three dealers, all owned by the same folks, that have one of the largest selections of Class Bs you'll find anywhere in the country. We're talking about Van City RV in St. Louis and their partner dealerships Creston RV in Kalispell, Montana, and Wagon Trail RV in Las Vegas, bringing you the largest inventory of Class Bs from three locations. Now, if you're in the market for a Class B, you know they're in high demand, and that's why these three dealers are deserving to be right at the top of your first checklist, because VanCityRV.com, CrestonRV.com, and WagonTrailRV.com specialize in Class Bs, and they carry them from all the major manufacturers. They have in stock on the lot right now, ready to deal, road treks, pleasure ways, leisure travel vans, Chinook vans, Class B, B pluses, other small motorhomes, VanCityRV.com, CrestonRV.com, WagonTrailRV.com. Here's our buddy Dan, the van man, to tell us what's going on this week.
Thanks, Mike. Hey, we have a great special on a 2013 Free Spirit SS with only 9,500 miles and one of the few Class B motorhomes with a slide out. You can check that out at VanCityRV.com. We have some great new units in stock, the new Pleasureway Lexer and the brand new 2018 Pleasureway Ascent. Again, VanCityRV.com, CrestonRV.com, or WagonTrailRV.com.
You're listening to the RV Podcast. You can find show notes, links to resources and websites Mike and his guests mention, and background material, videos and photos on the RVPodcast.com travel blog. And you can also send Mike a voice question to answer on the podcast. Just click the send voicemail button on RV Podcast.
Every RVer loves the wilderness, and a big reason many of us have RVs is to escape to that wilderness, and the best way to do that is to hike, to go on a hike, to get out, to explore the countryside around us, and to take, whether it's a long day route or just a picnic lunch trip out into the wilderness, or maybe just a out and back loop. But we do this sometimes much too casually. We don't take charge of weather. We don't bring the right gear. We don't follow the right procedures. And that is why I have invited on the podcast this week one of the top experts in hiking around the country. This guy really knows his stuff. His name is Douglas Scott, and he is from a group called the Wilderness Society. Doug Scott is a nationally recognized outdoors writer. He has works that appear in publications all over the country. Born and raised in the Pacific Northwest, and he has this passion for the wilderness that spills into everything that he does. He is a trail runner. In fact, when I interviewed him, he had just been out. He was at Yellowstone National Park, and he was out running all the roads that he could find in Yellowstone. He wants to run every road in there. He is an avid hiker. He's a guidebook author, and we are delighted to welcome him to the program, where he will share with us some of his expertise on some hiking information that all of us need to know about. Well, Douglas joins us right now from Montana, where you are, as I understand, near Yellowstone National Park.
Yes, I am, right in Big Sky County, country, I guess.
It is. What a great spot. Well, let's talk hiking, and let's talk about the typical hiker that I seem to run into. They love to describe themselves as a hiker, but when I see them walk out there, they tend to be wearing flip-flops or tennis shoes, you know, not even running shoes. Maybe we should talk a little bit about just some general safety guidelines about what people should bring with them, how they should pick a hike. So give us some of the things that you think are most important for anybody, whether they're casual hikers or hardcore hikers.
Well, the first thing that any hiker of all level needs to do is understand the terrain and the trail that they're getting into. It's fun to be able to look at a trail on a map and to jump on it and go, but there are many factors to hiking that a lot of people overlook, especially when we're first getting started or when we're just tired. If you jump out of the car and read the trailhead and you see 4 miles, you don't necessarily know, is that 4 miles with severe elevation? Is that going to be 4 miles of a well-maintained trail, or are you going to have to bushwhack? And so getting to know the terrain, talking to rangers in an area, or even reading reviews online, that's one thing that everyone should do before they even head to a destination, is to just look at the trails in the area. One of the things I enjoy doing is before I take a trip, I like to find out all the trails at every point that I'm going to. So I have a spreadsheet that is meticulously laid out of trails, distance, elevation, terrain, animals you might see, average temperatures. I try and look everything up I can, because you never know what you're going to get into the minute you step off of out of a trail parking lot onto the trail itself.
So many people say, oh, you know, it's just a 2 mile hike, like you say, or it's a 4 miles round trip. I don't need to even look at the map, but maybe you could give us some examples or some understanding of why they really do look at a map, even though that distance doesn't seem far. What are some of the things that you've encountered out there? You know, there must be surprises on every trail, but the things that people need to be aware of.
There are a lot of things to think about when you're going on a trail, especially with the distance. And when I look at a trail and I say, oh, it's just 2 miles, I then have to remember that it's not 2 miles walking on a flat pavement neighborhood. You know, if you're walking a sidewalk in town, 2 miles kind of flies by. But when you have limited visibility, when you are in the woods, and when there are side trails from people or animals, it's really easy, if you're not experienced, to stumble off the trail. Just recently in Olympic National Park, a woman was going to scatter her husband's ashes out on a trail up on one of the ridges. She ended up somehow getting lost on a half mile to a mile long trail and ended up spending 6 days in the wilderness.
Oh my goodness.
Because she lost the trail. And that's something that, you know, she didn't have any proper gear with her. She didn't have anything because it was just a half mile trail. It was just a mile hike. I don't need anything. Where realistically, if you go on a trail and you decide to leave the main trail for any reason and something happens to you, people may not find you for a while.
Well, you don't think of that even, you know, you tend to look at the distance and say, well, that's a piece of cake. I can do that. And that leads me to the next question about what should people carry with them? And I know that's a tough question to answer easily, because it depends on the trail and the terrain and all of that stuff.
Correct.
But still some basic things that you should never go out without.
So you'll hear most experts say that you should always bring the 10 essentials with you. That's water, food, some way to find direction, something to sleep in, extra clothes, a headlamp, all sorts of things that you probably don't need for a short day hike. However, there are things that on short day hikes you should bring with you anyway. You should always bring extra food and extra water with you. I live in the Puget Sound region of Washington State. And my favorite hike is Mount Eleanor. And it's a shortish hike if you go from the upper trailhead. It's a couple miles and a couple thousand feet up. And it offers amazing panoramic views. It's a popular hike. 20,000 people hike it a year. However, every time I go up there, there are people who don't have the proper clothes, proper footwear, and nearly every person I meet on that trail does not have water with them. And it goes up to 6,000 feet from 2,000 feet or 3,000 feet. So you're getting up there exposed in the sun with zero water, and that's how accidents happen. Dehydration is probably the thing I preach most about being prepared. I also think having something like a rain jacket with you is very important. Even if it doesn't look like it's going to rain, if you're in the mountains, you could have a thunderstorm immediately. That happened to me just 2 days ago. I was hiking, it was 90 degrees, and a thunderstorm rolled in and it started hailing. Luckily, I had a rain jacket in my little backpack and put that on, and I was good. Also, as I mentioned, food. If you run low on fuel, more accidents will happen as your brain is struggling to react to your changing terrain. If you get injured, then you're putting undue stress on search and rescue, and most injuries will occur from carelessness. There are very few accidents that happen that aren't necessarily the hiker's fault.
It's just smart stuff. People never bring food. I just hiked in Yellowstone. One of our favorite little trails is Trout Lake up in the northeast section of Yellowstone. Mm-hmm. I think it's not even maybe 2 miles round trip.
I think it's 1.2 miles up.
Yeah, and then back around, and it's just an easy trip. Except I forgot, you're still climbing 300-400 feet. It's not a big climb, but I was really thirsty, and I figured, we're only going to be out there for 40 yep. minutes, and I was so glad that my wife had brought water, and I forgot all about it, and I thought to myself, boy, am I stupid, it was a nice day, it was a short hike, but you really can become dehydrated very quickly, and I'm so glad to hear you say that and to remind me of how dumb I have been and how dumb I will not be again. I promise. so water and food.
And it's definitely one of those things people overlook. And right now, if you go to most outdoor stores, most backpacks now come with a Camelback-like water bladder for your backpack. That's like 1, 1.5, or 2 liters. I never go on a hike without having that full, even if it's just a couple miles, because you never know.
That's good, man. Okay, other gear that you might want to think about, and here we can kind of, you mentioned the minimum, but let's say we're going to go for a half a day or it's a full day hike as we wander around. Is that when we start to think about taking shelter and changes of clothes, that sort of stuff?
Correct. And I think when you're looking at a half day to a full day hike, that's when you need to start carrying a bigger backpack. That's when you need to bring a couple thousand calories per person, 1,000 to 1,500 calories. This morning I just ran 5 miles and I burnt 800 calories. And so if you look at replacing the calories burnt, you need to bring lots of food. You're also going to be putting a lot of stress on your body that you're not necessarily used to. When you're walking around at work or walking around at home, it's typically flat or you're going up, maintain steps that are always the same height. However, on a trail, you don't get that luxury. So I always try and tell people when they're hiking any longer distances than 1 or 2 miles, bring trekking poles or a walking stick. Those will save so much more energy and so much more leg strength for you. I think that is one of the more underrated pieces of gear that the average hiker will not bring with them, because there's a little bit of pride of, oh, I don't need to bring hiking sticks. I bring hiking sticks with me all the time and I love them. You also want to bring an extra pair of socks. You may want to bring a pair of sandals if you're going someplace where there's some water that you may need to cross. And again, if you look at the terrain of the map and you study the map of what you're doing, there's a lot of creeks that you may need to go through that if you get your shoes and socks wet, then your day is kind of ruined. You also again, need to bring a lot of extra food, but something with some protein, something to replace electrolytes. I think Noon tablets, they're little dissolvable tablets that you can put in water, are a very good thing to bring with you. They help boost your protein, they replace electrolytes, and your sodium level. If you drink too much water without enough sodium, then you're actually doing more harm than good.
I never thought
headlamps are, yeah. Your body, when you sweat out, you're sweating out salt. And if you don't replace that salt, then it becomes an issue. One thing we've started doing out here in Montana, since it's been very warm, is we'll get a Gatorade bottle. We'll drink half of it, you know, the day before, then fill up the rest of it. So it's a half Gatorade, half water. We'll freeze it, and then we'll put it in the freezer, you know, put it in the freezer, then we'll put it in our bag and hike out, and then you have something cold and something very refreshing that's going to replace those electrolytes. Having a headlamp when you're hiking is another important thing. You may think it's just going to be 5 or 6 miles, but you don't know how long that may take you. So if you're hiking out at night, your cell phone probably isn't going to be a light a trail as well as a headlamp.
Good.
But you have better views.
I've heard, what about leaving a note? How important is that, even if you're on an obvious trailhead? But do you leave a note every time? And is that important? What details should you put maybe on your dashboard of your vehicle when you park at a trailhead? How important is that, and what should you tell people?
So I don't leave notes on my dashboard, mainly because there is a certain element and a certain population that is going to trailhead, trying to figure out how long people are going to be hiking. And there are some break-ins that occur. So the less information you can put about where you're going, the safer your car and the stuff you leave in your car is going to be. Obviously don't leave valuables in your car. But as far as the note goes, what I do is I have a system where I have 3 people on social media that I send a message of where I'm hiking. I tell them the trail I'm going to, the distance I'm going, where I plan on stopping along the trail. So if there's a side waterfall that I want to look at, I tell them I'm going to look at that. I give them the exact itinerary of my day. Then I also say what time I expect to be home. So if I'm going to be going for a full day hike, I say, don't call search and rescue unless I am not back by 11 p.m. or you haven't heard from me by 11 p.m. Typically, I try and be off the trails by 7 p.m. So that gives me a good enough window. If I know it could be a longer day, I also then say, you know, I have the gear I need to be out for one night. So don't call search and rescue or 911 until, you know, noon the next day. Good. And that way, when you leave a note like that, it's good. If you don't have social media, but you are at a national park and you just have a roadside trail that you're doing, maybe send a text if you can. Otherwise, you might want to think about leaving that note on your dashboard. But again, it's one of those things you might want to think about before you head out. Instead of doing spur-of-the-moment hikes, always try and plan ahead a bit so that way you can notify someone where you're at.
Other ideas, weather, you know, getting in shape before you head out there, and then just some general ideas on the trail. I know, you know, how important it is to take a break, and should you hike alone? Just some off the top of your head, other advice that you would give all of us as we head out camping.
So when you go hiking, you have to know yourself. It's really easy to think, oh, I've hiked 5-6 miles in a day before. I can do this no problem. I have this conversation with my dad all the time. My dad grew up running track and running cross country. He was a college athlete and hiked well into his 30s and 40s. Then when he got into his 50s and into his 60s, he stopped being active. But when we talk, he still talks like, oh, I could do that. That's no problem. I can hike 10 miles a day, where realistically, if I take him on a 5-mile hike instead of a 10-mile hike, he gets winded, he gets tired. So you have to really step back and be honest with yourself about what sort of shape you're in. I think everyone should push themselves a little bit on a hike, but when you're pushing yourself on a hike and you feel out of your comfort zone, you need to take a break. You need to rest. You need to enjoy the moment and sit back and remember why you're heading out into nature in the first place. Mm-hmm. We like to experience the beauty of wilderness. And if you're struggling and sweating and hyperventilating and hating your hike, then what's the point of a hike? It needs to be enjoyable. So take breaks. Hiking is not a competitive sport. There's nobody that's going to criticize you if you hike 1 mile an hour or 3 miles an hour if you had a fun experience. We're all out there for a soul-nourishing time, and that's really what I try and tell people is sit down and relax if you need to. I just went on a hike into the crazy mountains of Montana, and we averaged 1 mile every 30 minutes, which for me is very slow. But it allowed me to take pictures. We watched butterflies dancing around in fields of wildflowers. We looked at mountains and were scanning for animals up on the cliffs. And I realized that that was just as much fun as me powering to the summit of some mountain, of being nice and slow. I also think when you're headed out and you're a little nervous, don't take an unnecessary risk. We like to tell people to be smart and know their limitations. If you don't feel comfortable going off a trail, don't go off the trail. Stay on the main trail. Very little happens to you if you stay on a main trail. If you run into wildlife again, you leave wildlife away from you. You stay the recommended distances. You tell people where you're going to the bathroom if you're hiking with someone else. You let everybody know what you're doing. And you mentioned solo hiking. A lot of people will say you shouldn't solo hike. However, if you leave a detailed itinerary, you stick to your plan, and you don't take unnecessary risks, there's nothing really wrong with solo hiking. It's a very good way to get back in touch with who you are.
Well, you're making me want to get out there right now, Douglas Stone. I'm going to put links to the Outdoor Society and a detailed story that you wrote just recently on that covers many of the things we just talked about and more. And I'd love to have you back on in the future. I know where you are, and you are going to go out and probably enjoy the rest of the day and make all of us wish that we were with you in Montana.
I appreciate it. Thank you.
Thanks again for being on the program. All right, the interview of the week is brought to you by our friend at SunshineStateRVs.com. And by the way, all of the stuff that Douglas Scott talked about, we've got a link to his tips that he mentioned and many of the articles that he's written. So you can follow Doug Scott's tips right from our show notes. Just go to roadtrekking.com/152. Again, brought to you, the interview brought to you by SunshineStateRVs.com, where every new or used Road Trek motorhome is delivered to the customer free anywhere in the country. At Sunshine State RVs, you'll find the largest selection of some of the best shape RVs, used Class B RVs that you'll find anywhere in North America. If you are looking for a used Class B RV, you need to either make the trip to sunny Gainesville, Florida, or check out their website, SunshineStateRVs.com. They have older models that go back to the 90s to current year used models, and of course, a full line of brand new Road Trek models as well. Their used models include Road Trek, Pleasure Way, Winnebago, Leisure Travel, and more. You're not going to find a wider selection of used Class B RVs anywhere in the country. Every RV they sell goes through a very thorough 172-point inspection in which they ensure that all of the mechanical and manual systems are in top condition. Every RV is road tested to make sure it runs and drives the way it should. They go over the interior components just as entirely as the outside. Every component turned on, tested. SunshineStateRVs.com.
Mike's got news. RV news, travel news, inside information and trends that shape the RV lifestyle. Here's the RV news of the week.
All right, three stories for you this week. First of all, over the weekend, an RV owner wasn't paying attention, apparently, and he smacked into a toll booth in San Francisco. And at the Golden Gate Bridge toll plaza there, this happened last week, and the vehicle got wedged in there. He ended up doing some damage to some of the parts of the toll booth itself, an attenuator, whatever that does there. It's a 10-foot, 6-inch wide lane. Plenty of room for the RV, but they, whatever reason, smacked into it, and the guess what it's going to cost? $10,000, a preliminary estimate of a concrete block and a crash attenuator that this RV damaged at the Golden Gate Bridge toll plaza is going to cost the owner of the RV as much as $10,000. The RV itself was damaged, its door and its hood, and there were two people inside it, and they couldn't get out. They had a call on the highway patrol and the fire protection people from the area and the Golden Gate Bridge workers and get the occupants out because the door was ripped off and wedged into the booth. It was a mess. They suffered some minor injuries, treated at the scene under investigation. But all this is to say, pay attention when you get into narrow spaces like that. There was plenty of room for the RV to get through. We don't know what exactly happened, but it was a costly accident for the owner of the RV. And have you picked up your pass, your National Park Senior Pass yet? It's the America the Beautiful Lifetime Senior Pass. Has been available to buyers 62 and older for $10 for the past two decades. Best deal anywhere out there in the RV world. $10, and it would give you unlimited free access to all the national parks, free admission for everybody in your vehicle as well. Well, if you are unaware of this, on August 28th this year, the price goes up 700%. That $10 pass will start costing you $80 after August 28th, after a measure passed by Congress late last year. So the result of all this is there is a run. Many government agencies are running out of senior national park passes because so many people are trying to take advantage of that $10 fee up until the switchover happens on August 28th. This is a great deal. I mean, even $80, it's well worth the price. But $10 now till the 28th. Agencies expect to sell, we're told, 2 million of the passes by this fall. Which is about three times what was sold all of last year. And they're also taking online and mail orders. But you got to do these in person right now. So that $10 price has been that way since 94. And this is a good deal. You got to be 62 years old to take advantage of it. But if you are, you want to go to a national park near you and try and get this thing for $10 before the 28th. After that, cost you more. Hey, we just had that report from about hiking in our interview of the week, and we talked about how important it was to take water and to be prepared. And underscoring that is a terrible story from the Grand Canyon. A Texas mom who was hiking with her kids is believed to have died from heat exhaustion. She was missing for a while. She was hiking with her daughter and her nephew in the Grand Canyon. Dr. Sarah Beadle is her name. She's a Texas physician, and they found her body at the bottom of the canyon last week. It was discovered by park rangers, and they believe that she died of heat exhaustion. Now, this woman was very fit. She's 38. She's an experienced hiker. She was reported missing August 1st when she didn't check into the campground after hiking down the South Kaibab Trail there at Grand Canyon with two kids, 10, 11 years old. Her husband said that his wife had been hiking the Grand Canyon with her daughter and nephew. The young girl began to feel dizzy from heat exhaustion, and they had run out of water. So his wife, Sarah, left the kids in a safe place where there's a little shade, and she was going to go ahead to get water and some help. Somewhere along the trail, she made a wrong turn, and she got lost. And obviously, they believe heat exhaustion is what did her in. And so sad. But it's just another example of why it is so important to take precautions and to hike safely, as our interview of the week said just a little while ago. So those are the stories for this week. And again, our hearts go out to the family of that Texas physician. The news of the week brought to you by Aldi, A-L-D-E, the only name in heat that you need to know for your RV. Now, we're talking about hot weather right now, but cold weather is coming. And if you are an RVer who likes to camp in the cold of wintertime or late fall, early spring, you know how important it is to have good, comfortable heat. And that is why we love to talk about the Aldi Hydronic System. The Hydronic System brings features and benefits that you can't find with any other RV product. It's a silent heat. It's a radiant heat. It gives you a warm, even natural heated interior. It's similar to that high-end baseboard heat that you get in expensive estate-type homes. And the Aldi system is, it will work on propane, and it's very efficient. It only draws less than 1 amp on 12 volts DC. So it extends the life of propane about 40% over forced air. And because it's this radiant heat, there's none of that dryness that comes that you get with that forced air. There's not that noise. It's silent. It's comfortable. And you can get many different options. The one that we have on our RV, for example, are the heated floors that we just love. Aldi, A-L-D-E, is now available on a number of different RV platforms. New Camp, Airstream, Road Trek RVs all have it. Aldi is the only name in heat that you need to know when choosing a heating system for your RV.
With technology. It's time now for our RV Tech Tip of the Week.
All right, checking in with us from our Verizon Wireless is our pal Steve Van Dinter. And Steve and I were together just a couple weeks ago in Grand Rapids at a road trekking traveling tech demo there. Met a lot of you. And from that comes this report from Steve.
Hi there, Mike. Recently at our meetup in Grand Rapids, we had a number of questions come up about how best to use a Chromecast Ultra to meet your entertainment needs while on the road. Well, first, for those who need a bit of a refresher, a Chromecast Ultra is a hockey puck-looking device that has an HDMI cable that plugs into the back of your TV. When connected to a Wi-Fi network, be it via a hotspot on your phone or Jetpack, it allows you to stream or cast any video or pictures from your phone, laptop, or tablet to your TV. This means content like HBO Go for those Game of Thrones fans, or Netflix, or even streaming video from your local news stations back home can be easily viewed while on the road. You can even move the Chromecast Ultra easily between your home TV and RV TV. Just make sure your Wi-Fi network's name and password matches that of your mobile one. Then once plugged in, look for the blue cast icon in apps like Netflix, HBO Go, and others. Or if your app isn't supported, you can cast anything that's on your device's screen to the TV by clicking on the Google Home app and then clicking on Menu and Cast Screen Audio. With this week's Traveling Technology Tip, I'm Steve Van Dinter from Verizon.
All right, there's a link to Chromecast under the Traveling Tech info part of our podcast show notes. Just go to roadtrekking.com/152 and you'll see a link and you can learn more about Chromecast Ultra. But lots of people were very interested in it. It's just a great way to be able to keep up on all your favorite entertainment demands while you're out on the road. It works great with your RV and plug it right into your RV TV and you are good to go. Hey, this part of the podcast brought to you by Verizon Wireless. That's the official network for road trekking and the RV podcast when we're on the road. That's how we send this podcast in when we're traveling. I also send our YouTube video channel reports in, and you know how big those video files are. So I need to upload. I need a good solid connection to the internet. And as we're traveling, sometimes in remote areas, that's hard to find unless your carrier is Verizon, and that's why we use Verizon. I can get through almost anywhere in North America. I have had great contacts from places that were far removed from civilization, and there I was streaming video and sending my own in and on the internet doing all my work. Makes it possible for me to work on the road with reliability. Verizon Wireless. If you're stuck on the wrong network, just get over to Verizon and get unstuck.
Time now for Off the Beaten Path
a unique RV podcast travel suggestion you probably won't find in a guidebook. Here's Mike.
All right, time to check in with our most regular Off the Beaten Path reporters, Tom and Patty Burkett.
Hi, Mike and Jennifer. There are some places in this wide country of ours where there are no big roads, and no one really ever goes there except the people who live there. Here's descriptions of one of them: an oozing mass of water, mud, snakes, wolves, wildcats, biting flies, and clouds of gnats and mosquitoes 40 miles long and 100 or more wide. Water stands stagnant on the ground, waist deep, until it evaporates in the summer or turns into mud and muck in the winter. The undergrowth is absolutely impenetrable. While some travelers are given to hyperbole, this is a fairly objective description of the Great Black Swamp in northwestern Ohio, sometimes called the Dismal Swamp.
Families and explorers headed westward detoured around it until gradually it was diked and drained to create extraordinarily rich farmland. Today it grows strawberries, fruit trees, and produce that would make Central California farmers blush with envy. It's also home to a large settlement of Amish craftspeople, and these make up much of the workforce at Souder Industries in the little town of Archbold. Souder makes those flat-packed, some assembly-required bookshelves and TV carts and entertainment centers that predated IKEA.
Still very much a going concern with hundreds of workers, Souder continues to provide furniture for churches, schools, college dorm rooms, and yard sales. Also in Archbold is Souder Village, a living history museum and farm that recreates life at the turn of the 20th century. Costumed interpreters share stories of life on the Ohio frontier, the struggle to keep the fields drained, and the pleasures of days on the farm.
There's a church, an ice cream shop, and several craftspeople working in their shops. All of the ones you'd expect are there, as well as some that you don't see at other museums. A cooper, a broom maker, a tinsmith, and an encampment of Native Americans napping flint and making rope from natural fibers. Walk over to the farm and you might enjoy a local farm market, a chance to pet the baby animals, a stroll through the herb garden, or a turn behind the mule-drawn plow.
Drive a bit south to Wapakoneta. That's a fun name to say. And you can visit Jim Boucher's Temple of Tolerance. Jim bought up some vacant land behind the houses in his neighborhood, and he and his brother began building rock structures. From simple to grand, each structure has a story. So do many of the rocks, which have been collected from notable locations. Call ahead, and you might get Jim to give you a tour himself. A real treat.
If you're here at the end of the summer, head over to Tiny Venedosia on Labor Day weekend for the annual Gamanfa Gani. This tradition was brought to the region by the Welsh coal miners who emigrated here in the 1800s. Under the direction of a guest choral conductor, and usually with the assistance of a well-known Welsh soloist, singers gather to belt out an evening's worth of hymns in an unaccompanied four-part harmony. Sing in Welsh or English, whichever you prefer.
It's a little easier to get around than it was 200 years ago, but it's not much more populated. Despite that, there are dozens of things to see and do in this little corner of the Midwest. Come explore on your own. Whether you like history, classic cars, art, natural beauty, or delicious pizza cooked in a 600-degree oven, it's quite possible you'll run into us, Patty and Tom Burkett, somewhere around here, Off the Beaten Path.
All right. And if you'd like to find links to Souder Village and all the stuff that the Burkitts just talked about, just look at the show notes for this episode, which is roadtrekking.com/152. This part of the podcast brought to you by our friends at Steinbring Motor Coach, Road Trek's newest dealer and a third generation family business located in Minnesota's beautiful Chain of Lakes region that is built on quality motorhomes and excellent pricing and service since 1917. That's how long the Steinbring family has been bringing you the best products and service within the transportation industry. Their sales staff brings you decades of experience in the recreational vehicle industry. They're now celebrating 100 years in business with a third generation family business. And along with being named Blue Ribbon Dealers and top 50 dealers year after year, they offer new and used Newmar Class A motorhomes. Pros, as well as Road Trek Class Bs. Also for sale, pre-owned coaches from most of the big popular demands, big popular brands out there like Road Trek and Winnebago and Itasca and Tiffin, Fleetwood, Holiday Rambler. Jennifer and I visited them in the Chain of Lakes region there in Minnesota earlier this summer. We had a great time looking around the dealership. They have a beautiful indoor showroom that is packed with beautiful motorhomes that you can go in and explore. You will not find a nicer place to do business than the folks at Steinbrings. Award-winning sales, award-winning service, Steinbring Motor Coach in the Chain of Lakes region in Minnesota. Head over there and make sure you tell them that you heard about them on the RV Podcast.
Traveling and celebrating the RV lifestyle. This has been the RV Podcast with journalist Mike Wendland. Got a question for the next episode? Just click the send voicemail link on the RVpodcast.com blog. Till then, we'll see you out there, somewhere off the beaten path.
And so ends another episode of Road Trekking, the RV Podcast. Remember, if you would like to have your voice heard, if you'd like to be a part of the podcast, we welcome that. We would love you to record a voicemail message. Just click the right-hand button on the roadtrekking.com website. You can use the microphone in your computer or on your smartphone, and you can record it over and over until you're happy with it, and then just click a button. It'll come right to my email inbox, and we can have you and your voice featured in the next episode of Road Trekking, the RV Podcast. Please don't forget to visit our YouTube video channel. It's the RV Lifestyle channel. If you go to youtube.com, just search for RV Lifestyle channel, and you'll find Mike and Jennifer's RV Lifestyle channel. We can also get to it by just going to rvlifestylechannel.com, but YouTube's easier, probably. And we've got new videos up all the time. We've got a whole bunch that we're working on now that you'll be seeing several of them a week, new ones. And if you subscribe, there's a way that you can even be notified whenever we have a new video on so you don't miss out on it. But we'd appreciate it if you'd check us out on our YouTube video channel. Thanks so much for listening to the podcast. We have new episodes every single Wednesday morning. Subscribe on YouTube or with Stitcher or iTunes or any of the media players that you might have on your smartphone. And of course, you can listen to us through the computer. Just go to roadtrekking.com and look at the podcast category, and there you'll be able to click and listen to it right through there as well. Thanks so much for being a part of the podcast. Have fun out there, everybody. We'll see you out there, road trekking across North America. Bye-bye.